studded with dozens of bleached white animal skulls. A rotting deck jutted out from the front, cluttered with mildewed plastic chairs. Off to the left, between the cabin and the trees, were decrepit animal pens and a dilapidated chicken coop. There was junk everywhere, lying in the tall grass, a big pile of spokes, oil drums, coils of reddish wire, an old-fashioned wooden washing machine with a hand-cranked wringer. Dad put his hands on his hips and threw his head back and howled like a wolf. When he stopped and silence settled in again, he swept Mama into his arms, twirling her around. When he finally let her go, Mama stumbled back. She was laughing, but there was a kind of horror in her eyes. The cabin looked like something an old, toothless hermit would live in, and it was small. Would they all be cramped into a single room?
"Look at it,"
Dad said, making a sweeping gesture with his hand. They all turned away from the cabin and looked out to the sea.
"That's Otter Cove."
At this late afternoon hour, the peninsula and the sea seemed to glow from within, like a land enchanted in a fairy tale. The colors were more vibrant than she'd ever seen before. Waves lapping the pebbled shore left a sparkling residue. On the opposite shore, the mountains were a lush, deep purple at their bases and stark white at their peaks. The beach below, their beach, was a curl of gray polished pebbles washed by an easy, white foam surf. A rickety set of stairs built in the shape of a lightning bolt led from the grassy meadow to the shore. The wood had turned gray from age and was black from mildew. Chicken wire covered each step. The stairs looked fragile, as if a good wind could shatter them. The tide was out. Mud coated everything, oozed along the shore, which was draped in seaweed and kelp. Clumps of shiny black mussels lay exposed on the rocks. Lenny remembered her dad telling her that the Boer tide in Upper Cook Inlet created waves big enough to surf. Only the Bay of Fundy had a higher tide. She hadn't really understood that fact until now, as she saw how far up the stairs the water could get. It would be beautiful at high tide, but now, with the tide ebbed and mud everywhere, she understood what it meant. At low tide, the property was inaccessible by boat.
"Come on," Dad said. "Let's check out the house."
He took Lenny by the hand and led them through the grass and wildflowers, past the junk, barrels overturned, stacks of wooden pallets, old coolers, and broken crab pots. Mosquitoes nipped at her skin, drew blood, made a droning sound. At the porch steps, Mama hesitated. Dad let go of Lenny's hand and bounded up the sagging steps and opened the front door and disappeared inside. Mama stood there a moment, breathing deeply. She slapped hard at her neck, left a smear of blood behind.
"Well," she said, "this isn't what I expected."
"Me either," Lenny said. There was another long silence. Then, quietly, Mama said,
"Let's go."
She took Lenny's hand as they walked up the rickety steps and entered the dark cabin. The first thing Lenny noticed was the smell. Poop. Some animal, she hoped it was an animal, had pooped everywhere. She pressed a hand over her mouth and nose. The place was full of shadows, dark shapes and forms. Cobwebs hung in ropey skeins from the rafters. Dust made it hard to breathe. The floor was covered in dead insects so that each step produced a crunch.
"Yuck,"
Lenny said. Mama flung open the dirty curtains and sunlight poured in, thick with dust motes. The interior was bigger than it looked from outside. The floors had been crafted of rough, mismatched plywood nailed into place in a patchwork quilt pattern. Skinned log walls displayed animal traps, fishing poles, baskets, frying pans, water buckets, nets. The kitchen, such as it was, took up one corner of the main room. Lenny saw an old camp stove and a sink with no fixtures. Beneath it was a curtained-off space. On the counter sat an old ham radio, probably from World War II, cloaked in dust. In the center of the room, a black wood stove held court, its metal pipe rising up to the ceiling like a jointed tin finger pointed at heaven. A ragged sofa, an overturned wooden crate that read Blazo on the side, and a card table with four metal chairs comprised the cabin's furnishings. A narrow, steeply pitched log ladder led to a skylit loft space, and off to the left, a curtain of psychedelic-colored beads hung from a narrow doorway. Lenny pushed through the dusty beaded curtain and went into the bedroom beyond, which was barely bigger than the stained, lumpy mattress on the floor. Here there was more junk hanging from hooks on the walls. It smelled vaguely of animal excrement and settled dust. Lenny kept a hand over her mouth, afraid she'd gag as she returned to the living room. Crunch, crunch on the dead bugs.
Where's the bathroom?
Mama gasped, headed for the front door, flung it open, and ran out. Lenny followed her out onto the sagging deck and down the half-broken steps.
Over there, Mama said, and pointed at a small wooden building surrounded by trees.
A half-moon cutout on the door identified it. An outhouse. An outhouse.
Holy shit, Mama whispered. No pun intended, Lenny said.
She leaned against her mother. She knew what Mama was feeling right now, so Lenny had to be strong. That was how they did it, she and Mama. They took turns being strong. It was how they'd gotten through the war years.
Thanks, baby girl. I needed that.
Mama put an arm around Lenny, drew her close.
We'll be okay, won't we? We don't need a TV, or running water, or electricity.
Her voice ended on a high, shrill note that sounded desperate.
We'll make the best of it, Lenny said, trying to sound certain instead of worried. And he'll be happy this time. You think so?
I know so.
4. The next morning, they rolled up their sleeves and got to work. Lenny and Mama cleaned the cabin. They swept and scrubbed and washed. It turned out that the sink in the cabin was dry. There was no running water inside, so water had to be carried in by the bucketful from a stream not far away and boiled before they could drink it, cook with it, or bathe in it. There was no electricity. Propane-fueled lights swung from the rafters and sat on the plywood countertops. Beneath the house was a root cellar that was at least 8 feet by 10 feet, layered with sagging, dusty shelving and filled with empty, filthy mason jars and mildewed baskets. So they cleaned all of that, too, while Dad worked on clearing the driveway so they could drive the rest of their supplies onto the homestead. By the end of the second day, which, by the way, lasted forever, the sun just kept shining and shining, it was 10 p.m. before they quit work. Dad built a bonfire on the beach, their beach, and they sat on fallen logs around it, eating tuna fish sandwiches and drinking warm Coca-Colas. Dad found mussels and butter clams and showed them how to crack them open. They ate each of the slimy mollusks in a single gulp. Night didn't fall. Instead, the sky became a deep lavender pink. There were no stars. Lenny glanced across the dancing orange firelight, sparks spraying skyward, snapping like music, and saw her parents coiled together, Mama's head on Dad's shoulder, Dad's hand laid lovingly on her thigh, a woolen blanket wrapped around them. Lenny took a picture. At the flash and the snap whiz of the Polaroid, Dad looked up at her and smiled.
We're going to be happy here, Rhett. Can't you feel it?
Yeah, she said, and for the first time ever, she really believed it.
Lenny woke to the sound of someone or something pounding on the cabin door. She scrambled out of her sleeping bag, shoved it aside, toppling her stack of books in her haste. Downstairs, she heard the rustle of beads and the pounding of footsteps as Mama and Dad ran for the door. Lenny dressed quickly and hurried down the ladder. Large Marge stood in the yard with two other women. Behind them, a rusted dirt bike lay on its side in the grass, and beside that was an all-terrain vehicle loaded down with coiled chicken wire.
Hello, Albrights, Large Marge said brightly, waving her saucer-sized hand in greeting. I brought some friends, she said, indicating the two women she'd brought with her.
One was a wood sprite,
small enough to be a kid, with long, gray, silly string-like hair. The other was tall and thin. All three of them were dressed in flannel shirts and stained jeans that were tucked into brown rubber knee-high boots. Each carried a tool, a chainsaw, an awl, a hatchet.
"We've come to offer some help getting started," Large Marge said, "and we brought you a few things you'll need."
Lenny saw her father frown.
"You think we're incompetent?"
"This is how we do it up here, Ernt," Large Marge said.
"Believe me, no matter how much you've read and studied, you can never quite prepare for your first Alaskan winter."
The wood sprite came forward. She was thin and small, with a nose sharp enough to slice bread. Leather gloves stuck out of her shirt pocket. For as slight as she was, she exuded an air of competence.
"I'm Natalie Watkins. Large Marge told me y'all don't know much about life up here. I was the same way 10 years ago. I followed a man up here. Classic story. I lost the man and found a life. Got my own fishing boat now. So I get the dream that brings you here, but that's not enough. You're going to have to learn fast."
Natalie put on her yellow gloves.
"I never found another man worth having. You know what they say about finding a man in Alaska. The odds are good, but the goods are odd."
The taller woman had a beige braid that fell almost to her waist, and eyes so pale they seemed to take their color from the faded sky.
"Welcome to Connick. I'm Geneva Walker. Jen. Jenny. The generator. I'll answer to almost anything."
She smiled, revealing dimples.
"My family is from Fairbanks, but I fell in love with my husband's land, so here is where I've stayed. I've been here for 20 years.
"You need a greenhouse and a cache at the very least," Large Marge said. "Old Bo had big plans for this place when he bought it, but Bo went off to war, and he was a great one for getting a job half done."
"A cache?"
Dad said. Large Marge nodded brusquely.
"A cache is a small building on stilts. Your meat goes there so the bears can't get at it. This time of year, the bears are hungry."
"Come on, Ernt," Natalie said, reaching down for the chainsaw at her feet. "I brought a portable mill. You cut down the trees, and I'll saw them into planks. First things first, righto?"
Dad went back into the cabin, put on his down vest, and headed into the forest with Natalie. Soon, Lenny heard the whir of a chainsaw and the thunking of an axe into wood.
"I'll get started on the greenhouse," Geneva said. "I imagine Bo left a tangle of PVC pipe somewhere."
Large Marge walked up to Lenny and Mama. A breeze picked up. It turned cold in the blink of an eye. Mama crossed her arms. She had to be cold, standing there in a Grateful Dead t-shirt and bell-bottom jeans. A mosquito landed on her cheek. She slapped it away in a smear of blood.
"Our mosquitoes are bad," Large Marge said. "I'll bring you some repellent next time I come to visit."
"How long have you lived here?" Mama asked.
10 of the best years of my life," Large Marge answered. "Life in the bush is hard work, but you can't beat the taste of salmon you caught in the morning, drizzled with butter you churned from your own fresh cream. Up here, there's no one to tell you what to do or how to do it. We each survive our own way. If you're tough enough, it's heaven on earth."
Lenny stared up at the big, rough-looking woman in a kind of awe. She'd never seen a woman so tall or strong-looking. Large Marge looked like she could fell a full-grown cedar tree and sling it over her shoulder and keep going.
"We needed a fresh start," Mama said, surprising Lenny. It was the kind of rock-bottom truth Mama tended to avoid.
"He was in Nam."
"POW, how did you know?"
"He has the look, and, well, Bo left you this place."
Large Marge glanced left, to where Dad and Natalie were cutting down trees.
"Is he mean?"
No, Mama said. "Of course not."
"Flashbacks? Nightmares?"
"He hasn't had one since we headed north."
"You're an optimist,"
Large Marge said.
"That'll be good for a start. Well, you'd best change your shirt, Cora. The bugs are going to go mad for all that bare white skin."
Mama nodded and turned back for the cabin.
"And you,
Large Marge said.
What's your story, Missy?
I don't have a story.
Everyone has a story. Maybe yours just starts up here.
Maybe.
What can you do?
Lenny shrugged.
I read and take pictures.
She indicated the camera that hung around her neck.
Not much that will do us any good.
Then you'll learn,
Large Marge said. She moved closer, leaned down to whisper conspiratorially into Lenny's ear.
This place is magic, kiddo. You just have to open yourself up to it. You'll see what I mean. But it's treacherous, too, and don't you forget that. I think it was Jack London who said there were 1,000 ways to die in Alaska. Be on the alert.
For what?
Danger.
Where will it come from? The weather? Bears? Wolves? What else?
Large Marge glanced across the yard again to where Dad and Natalie were felling trees.
It can come from anywhere. The weather and the isolation make some people crazy.
Before Lenny could ask another question, Mama came back, dressed for work in jeans and a sweatshirt.
Cora, can you make coffee?
Large Marge asked. Mama laughed and hip-bumped Lenny.
Well now, Large Marge, it seems you found the one thing I can do.
Large Marge and Natalie and Geneva worked all day alongside Lenny and her parents. The Alaskans labored in silence, communicating with grunts and nods and pointed fingers. Natalie put a chainsaw in a cage thing and milled the big logs Dad had cut down into boards all by herself. Each fallen tree revealed another slice of sunlight. Geneva taught Lenny how to saw wood and hammer nails and build raised vegetable beds. Together, they started the PVC pipe and plank structure that would become a greenhouse. Lenny helped Geneva carry a huge, heavy roll of plastic sheeting that they found in the broken-down chicken coop. They dropped it onto the ground.
Sheesh,
Lenny said. She was breathing hard. Sweat sheened her forehead and made her frizzy hair hang limply on either side of her flushed face. But the skeleton of a garden gave her a sense of pride, of purpose. She actually looked forward to planting the vegetables that would be their food. As they worked, Geneva talked about what vegetables to grow and how to harvest them and how important they would be when winter came. Winter was a word these Alaskans said a lot. It might be only May, almost summer, but the Alaskans were already focused on winter.
Take a break, kiddo, Geneva finally said, pushing to her feet. I need to use the outhouse.
Lenny staggered out of the greenhouse shell and found her mother standing alone, a cigarette in one hand, a cup of coffee in the other.
I feel like we've fallen down the rabbit hole,
Mama said. Beside her, the unsteady card table from the cabin held the remnants of lunch. Mama had made a stack of pan biscuits and fried up some bologna. The air smelled of wood smoke and cigarette smoke and fresh-cut wood. It sounded of chainsaws whirring, boards thumping onto piles, nails being hammered. Lenny saw Large Marge walking toward them. She looked tired and sweaty, but was smiling.
I don't suppose I could have a sip of that coffee?
Mama handed Large Marge her cup. The three of them stood there, gazing out at the homestead that was changing before their eyes.
Your Ernst is a good worker,
Large Marge said.
He's got some skills. Said his dad was a rancher.
Uh-huh, Mama said. Montana.
That's good news. I can sell you a breeding pair of goats as soon as you get the pens repaired. I'll give you a good price. They'll be good for milk and cheese. And you can learn a shitload from Mother Earth News magazine. I'll bring you over a stack.
Thank you, Mama said.
Geneva said Lenny was a joy to work with. That's good.
She patted Lenny so hard she stumbled forward.
But Cora, I've looked through your supplies. I hope you don't mind. You don't have nearly enough. How are your finances?
Things are tight.
Large Marge nodded. Her face settled into grim lines.
Can you shoot?
Mama laughed. Large Marge didn't smile.
I mean it, Cora. Can you shoot?
A gun?
Mama asked.
Yeah, a gun,
Large Marge said. Mama's laughter died.
No,
She stubbed out her cigarette on a rock.
Well, you aren't the first Chechakos to come up here with a dream and a poor plan.
Chechako?
Lenny asked.
Tenderfoot. Alaska isn't about who you were when you headed this way. It's about who you become. You are out here in the wild, girls. That isn't some fable or fairy tale. It's real. Hard. Winter will be here soon, and believe me, it's not like any winter you've ever experienced. It will cull the herd and fast. You need to know how to survive. You need to know how to shoot and kill to feed yourselves and keep yourselves safe. You are not the top of the food chain here.
Natalie and Dad walked toward them. Natalie was carrying the chainsaw and wiping her sweaty forehead with a bunched-up bandana. She was such a small woman, barely taller than Lenny. It seemed impossible that she could carry that heavy chainsaw around. At Mama's side, she stopped, rested the rounded tip of the chainsaw on the toe of her rubber boot.
Well, I got to feed my animals. I gave Ernt a good drawing for the cash.
Geneva strode toward them. Black dirt colored her hair, her face splattered across her shirt front.
Lenny has the right work attitude. Good for you, parents.
Dad laid an arm along Mama's shoulders.
I can't thank you ladies enough, he said.
Yes, your help means the world to us, Mama said. Natalie's smile gave her an elfin look.
Our pleasure, Cora. You remember, tonight you lock your door when you go to bed. Don't come out till morning. If you need a chamber pot, get one from Large Marge at the trading post.
Lenny knew her mouth gaped just a little. They wanted her to pee in a bucket?
Bears are dangerous this time of year. Black bears especially. They'll attack sometimes just 'cause they can,
Large Marge said.
And there are wolves and moose and God knows what else.
Marge took the chainsaw from Natalie and slung it over her shoulder as if it were a stick of balsam wood.
There's no police up here and no telephone except in town, so Ernt, you teach your women to shoot and do it fast. I'll give you a list of the minimum supplies you'll need before September. You'll need to bag a moose for sure this fall. It's better to shoot 'em in season, but, you know, what matters is meat in the freezer.
We don't have a freezer.
Lenny pointed out. The women laughed at that for some reason. Dad nodded solemnly.
Gotcha.
Okay, see you later,
the women said in unison. Waving, they walked toward their vehicles and mounted up and then drove down the trail that led out to the main road. In moments, they were gone. In the silence that followed, a cold breeze ruffled the treetops above them. An eagle flew overhead, a skateboard-sized silver fish struggling in its talon's grip. Lenny saw a dog collar hanging from the top branches of an evergreen. An eagle must have picked up a small dog and carried it away. Could an eagle carry off a girl who was skinny as a beanpole? Be careful. Learn to shoot a gun. They lived on a piece of land that couldn't be accessed by water at low tide, on a peninsula with only a handful of people and hundreds of wild animals in a climate harsh enough to kill you. There was no police station, no telephone service, no one to hear you scream. For the first time, she really understood what her dad had been saying. Remote. Lenny woke to the smell of frying bacon. When she sat up, pain radiated down her arms and up her legs. She hurt everywhere. Mosquito bites made her skin itch. 5 days, and up here the days were endless, sunlight lasted until almost midnight, of hard labor had revealed muscles she'd never known she had before. She climbed out of her sleeping bag and pulled on her hip-hugger jeans. She'd slept in her sweatshirt and socks. The inside of her mouth tasted terrible. She'd forgotten to brush her teeth last night. Already, she was beginning to conserve water that didn't flow through faucets, but had to be hauled inside by the bucketful. She climbed down the ladder. Mama was in the kitchen alcove at the camp stove, pouring oatmeal into a pot of boiling water. Bacon sizzled and snapped in one of the black cast-iron skillets they'd found hanging from a hook. Lenny heard the distant pounding of a hammer. Already, that rhythmic beat had become the soundtrack of their lives. Dad worked from sunup to sundown, which was a long day. He'd already repaired the chicken coop and fixed the goat pens.
I have to go to the bathroom, she said.
Fun, Mama said. Lenny put on her waffle stompers and stepped outside into a blue-sky day. The colors were so vibrant, the world hardly looked real. Green, swaying grass in the clearing, purple wildflowers, the gray zigzag steps leading to a blue sea that breathed in and out along the pebbled shore. Beyond it all, a fjord of impossible grandeur sculpted eons ago by glaciers. She wanted to go back for her Polaroid and take pictures of the yard, again, but already she was learning that she needed to conserve her film. Getting more would not be an easy thing up here. The outhouse was positioned on the bluff, in a stand of thin-trunked spruce overlooking the rocky coastline. On the toilet lid, someone had painted, "I never promised you a rose garden," and applied flower decals. She lifted the lid, using her sleeve to protect her fingers, and carefully averted her gaze from the hole as she sat down. When she finished, Lenny headed back to the cabin. A bald eagle soared overhead, gliding in a giant circle and then swooping up, flying away. She saw a giant fish carcass hanging high in one of the trees, catching the sunlight like a Christmas ornament. An eagle must have dropped it there, after picking all the meat off the bones. Off to her right, the cache was half-finished. 4 skinned log braces that led to a 3-foot by 3-foot wooden platform 12 feet in the air. Below it were 6 empty raised beds covered by a hoop skirt-like structure of pipe and wood that awaited plastic covering to become a greenhouse.
Lenny!
Her dad shouted, coming toward her in that exuberant, ground-covering walk of his. His hair was a dirty, dusty mess, and his clothes were covered with oil spots, and his hands were grubby. Pink sawdust peppered his face and hair. He waved at her, smiling. The joy on his face brought her to a complete stop. She couldn't remember the last time she'd seen him so happy.
"By God, it's beautiful here," he said.
Wiping his hands on a red bandana he kept wadded up in his jeans pocket, he looped an arm around her shoulder and walked with her into the cabin. Mama was just serving breakfast. The card table was rickety as heck, so they stood in the living room, eating oatmeal from their metal camp bowls. Dad shoveled a spoonful of oatmeal in his mouth at the same time he was chewing bacon. Lately, eating seemed to Dad to be a waste of time. There was so much to do outside. Immediately after breakfast, Lenny and Mama returned to cleaning the cabin. Already, they had removed layers of dust and dirt and dead bugs. Each of the rugs had been hung over the deck rails and beaten with brooms that looked as dirty as the rugs themselves. Mama took down the curtains and carried them out to one of the big oil drums in the yard. After Lenny hauled water up from the river, they filled the antique washing machine with water and laundry soap, and Lenny stood there for an hour, sweating in the sunshine, stirring the curtains in the soapy water. Then she carried the heavy, dripping mass of fabric to a barrel full of clean water for rinsing. Now she was feeding the soaking wet curtains through the old-fashioned wringer. The work was hard, back-breaking, exhausting. She could hear Mama in the yard not far away, singing as she washed another load of clothes in the sudsy water. Lenny heard an engine. She stood up, rubbing an ache out of her lower back. She heard the crunch of rocks, the splash of mud, and the old VW bus emerged from the trees and stopped in the yard. The road was finally cleared. Dad honked the horn. Birds flew up from the trees, squawked in irritation. Mama stopped stirring the laundry and looked up. The bandana that covered her blonde hair was wet with sweat. Mosquito bites created a red lattice pattern on her pale cheeks. She tented a hand across her eyes.
"You did it!" she yelled.
Dad stepped out of the bus and waved them over.
"Enough work, Albrights. Let's go for a drive."
Lenny squealed in delight. She was more than ready to take a break from this back-wrenching work. Scooping up the wrung-out fabric, she carried it over to the sagging clothesline Mama had set up between 2 trees and hung the curtains to dry. Lenny and Mama were both laughing as they climbed into the old bus. They had carried all of their supplies out of the bus already, several trips back and forth carrying heavy packs,
Only a few magazines and empty Coke cans were left on the seats. Dad battled the loose gear shift, shoved it into first gear. The bus made a sound like an old man coughing and shuddered, metal creaking, tires thumping in pits as it circled the grassy yard. Lenny could now see the driveway Dad had cleared.
"It was already there,"
he said, yelling to be heard over the engine's whine.
"A bunch of willows had grown up. I just had to clear it."
It was rough going, a track barely wider than the bus. Branches snapped into the windshield, scraped along the bus's sides. Their banner was ripped off, flew up, stuck in the trees. The driveway was more pits and boulders than dirt. The old bus was constantly rising and thumping down. Tires crunched slowly over exposed roots and granite outcroppings as they drove into the dark shadow cast by the trees. At the end of their driveway, they drove into the sunlight and onto a real dirt road. They rumbled past the Walker metal gate and the Birdsall sign. Lenny leaned forward, excited to see the marshes and airfields that signaled the outskirts of Canuck. Town. Only a few days ago, it had seemed worse than an outpost, but it didn't take much time in the Alaskan bush to reassess one's opinion. Canuck had a store. Lenny could get some film and maybe a candy bar.
"Hang on,"
Dad said as he turned left into the trees. "Where are we going?" Mama asked.
"To tell Bo Harlan's family thank you. I've brought his father a half gallon of whiskey."
Lenny stared out the dirty window. Dust turned the view into a haze. For miles, there was nothing but trees and bumps. Every now and then, a vehicle was rotting at the side of the road in the tall grass. There were no houses or mailboxes, just dirt trails here and there that veered off into the trees. If people lived out here, they didn't want you to find them. The road was rough, two beaten-down tire tracks on rocky, uneven ground. As they climbed in elevation, the trees grew thicker, began to block out more and more of the sun. They saw the first sign about 3 miles in. "No trespassing. Turn around. Yes, we mean you. Property protected by dogs and guns. Hippies, go home." The road ended at the crest of a hill with a sign that read, "Trespassers will be shot. Survivors will be shot again."
"Jesus," Mama said. "Are you sure we're in the right place?"
A man with a rifle appeared in front of them, stood with his legs in a wide stance. He had frizzy brown hair that puffed out from beneath a dirty trucker's cap.
"Who are you? What do you want?"
"I think we should turn around," Mama said.
Dad leaned his head out the window.
"We're here to see Earl Harlan. I was a friend of Bo's."
The man frowned, then nodded and stepped aside.
"I don't know, Ernt," Mama said. "This doesn't feel right."
Dad worked the gear shift. The old bus grumbled and rolled forward, jouncing over rocks and hillocks. They drove into a wide, flat patch of muddy ground, studded here and there with clumps of yellowing grass. 3 houses bordered the field. Well, shacks, really. They looked to have been made of whatever was handy. Sheets of plywood, corrugated plastic, skinned logs. A school bus, with curtains in the windows, sat on tireless rims, hip deep in the mud. Several scrawny dogs were chained up, straining at their leashes, snarling and barking. 5 barrels belched smoke that had a noxious, rubbery smell. People dressed in dirty clothes stepped out of the cabins and shacks, men with ponytails and buzz cuts and women wearing cowboy hats. All wore guns or knives in sheaths at their waists. Directly in front of them, from a log cabin with a slanted roof, a white-haired man emerged carrying an antique-looking pistol. He was wiry thin, with a long white beard and a toothpick chomped down tight in his mouth. He stepped down into the muddy yard. The dogs went crazy at his appearance, growled and snapped and groveled. A few jumped on top of their houses and kept barking. The old man pointed his gun at the bus. Dad reached for the door handle.
"Don't get out," Mama said, grabbing his arm.
Dad pulled free of Mama's grasp. He grabbed the half gallon of whiskey he'd brought and opened the door and stepped down into the mud. He left the bus door open behind him.
"Who are you?"
The white-haired man yelled, the toothpick bobbing up and down.
Aren't all bright, sir.
The man lowered his weapon.
Aren't? It's you? I'm Earl, Beau's daddy. It's me, sir. Well, slap me silly. Who you got with you?
Dad turned and waved at Lenny and Mama to get out of the bus.
Yeah, this seems like a good idea, Mama said as she opened her door.
Lenny followed. She stepped down into the mud, heard it squelch up around her waffle stompers. Around the compound, people were stopped, staring. Dad pulled them in close.
This is my wife, Cora, and my daughter, Lenny. Girls, this is Beau's dad, Earl. Folks call me Mad Earl, the old guy said.
He shook their hands, then swiped the bottle of whiskey from Dad and led them into his cabin.
Come in, come in.
Lenny had to force herself to enter the small, shadowy interior. It smelled like sweat and mildew. The walls were lined with supplies, food and gallons of water and cases of beer, boxes full of canned goods, heaps of sleeping bags. Along one whole wall, weapons, guns and knives and boxes of ammunition. Old-fashioned crossbows hung from hooks alongside maces. Mad Earl plopped onto a chair made of Blazo box slats. He cracked open the whiskey and lifted the bottle to his mouth, drinking deeply. Then he handed the jug to Dad, who drank for a long time before he handed the bottle back to Mad Earl. Mama bent down, picked an old gas mask up from a box full of them.
You collect war memorabilia? She said uneasily.
Mad Earl took another drink, draining an amazing amount of whiskey in a single gulp.
Nope, that ain't there for looks. The world's gone mad. A man has to protect himself. I came up here in 62. The lower 48 was already a mess. Commies everywhere, the Cuban Missile Crisis scaring the shit out of people, bomb shelters being built in backyards. I brung my family up here. We had nothing but a gun and a bag of brown rice. Figured we could live in the bush and stay safe and survive the nuclear winter that was coming.
He took another drink, leaned forward.
It ain't getting better down there. It's getting worse. What they'd done to the economy, to our poor boys who went off to war, it ain't my America anymore. I've been saying that for years, Dad said.
There was a look on his face Lenny had never seen before, a kind of awe, as if he'd been waiting a long time to hear those words.
Down there,
Mad Earl went on.
Outside, people are standing in line for gas while OPEC laughs all the way to the bank. And you think the good old USSR forgot about us after Cuba? Think again. We got Negroes calling themselves Black Panthers and raising their fists at us and illegal immigrants stealing our jobs. So what do? They protest. They sit down. They throw bombs at empty post office buildings. They carry signs and march down streets. Well, not me. I got a plan.
Dad leaned forward. His eyes were shiny.
What is it? We're prepared up here. We've got guns, gas masks, arrows, ammunition. We're ready.
Mama said, "Surely you don't really believe."
Oh, I do.
Mad Earl said.
The white man is losing out, and war is coming.
He looked at Dad.
You know what I mean, don't you, Albright? Of course I know. We all do. How many in your group?
Dad asked. Mad Earl took a long drink, then wiped the dribble from his spotted lips. His rheumy eyes narrowed, moved from Lenny to Mama.
Well, it's just our family, but we take it seriously, and we don't talk about it to strangers. Last thing we want is people knowing where we are when TSHTF.
There was a knock at the door, at Mad Earl's.
Come in!
The door opened to reveal a small, wiry-looking woman in camo pants and a yellow, smiley-face t-shirt.
Although she had to be almost 40, she wore her hair in pigtails. The man beside her was big as a house, with a long brown ponytail and bangs that strafed his eyes. She held a stack of Tupperware in her arms and had a pistol holstered at her hip.
"Don't let my daddy scare the bejesus out of you," the woman said, smiling brightly.
As she stepped farther into the cabin, a child sidled along beside her, a girl of about 4 who was barefoot and dirty-faced.
"I'm Thelma Schill, Earl's daughter. Beau was my big brother. This is my husband, Ted. This is Marybet. We call her Moppet."
Thelma placed a hand on the girl's head.
"I'm Cora," Mama said, extending her hand. "That's Lenny."
Lenny smiled hesitantly. Thelma's husband, Ted, stared at her through squinty eyes. Thelma's smile was warm, genuine.
"You going to school on Monday, Lenny?"
"There's a school," Lenny said.
"Course. It isn't big, but I think you'll make friends. Kids come from as far away as Bear Cove. I think there's another week of classes. School ends early up here, so kids can work."
"Where's the school?" Mama asked.
"On Alpine Street, just behind the saloon, at the base of Church Hill. You can't miss it. Monday morning at 9.
"We'll be there," Mama said, shooting Lenny a smile.
"Good. We are so happy to welcome you here, Cora and Ernt and Lenny."
Thelma faced them, smiling.
"Beau wrote us plenty from Nam. You meant so much to him.
Everyone wants to meet you all."
She crossed the room, took Ernt by the arm, and led him out of the cabin. Lenny and Mama followed behind, heard Mad Earl shuffle to his feet, grumbling about Thelma taking over. Outside, a ragged cluster of people, men, women, children, young adults, stood waiting, each holding something.
"I'm Clyde," said a man with a Santa beard and eyebrows like awnings. "Beau's younger brother."
He held out a chainsaw, its blade sheathed in bright orange plastic.
"I just sharpened the chain."
A woman and 2 young men, each about 20, stepped forward, along with 2 dirty-faced girls who were probably 7 or 8.
"This here's Donna, my wife, and the twins, Daryl and Dave, and our daughters, Agnes and Martha."
There weren't many of them, but they were friendly and welcoming. Each person they met gave them a gift, a hacksaw, a coil of rope, sheets of heavy plastic, rolls of duct tape, a bright silver knife called an ulu that was shaped like a fan. There was no one Lenny's age. The one teenager, Axel, who was 16, barely glanced at Lenny. He stood off by himself, throwing knives at a tree trunk. He had long, dirty black hair and almond-shaped eyes.
"You'll need to get a garden going fast," Thelma said as the men drifted toward one of the burn barrels and began passing the whiskey bottle from man to man. "Weather's unpredictable up here. Some years June is spring, July is summer, August is autumn, and everything else is winter."
Thelma led Lenny and Mama to a large garden, a fence made of sagging fishing nets bound to metal stakes kept out animals. Most of the vegetables were small, clumps of green on the mounds of black earth. Mats of something gross, it looked like kelp, lay drying at the base of the nets, alongside heaps of stinking fish carcasses and eggshells and coffee grounds.
"You know how to garden?" Thelma asked.
"I can tell a ripe melon," Mama said.
"I'd be happy to teach you. Up here, the growing season is short, so we have to really work it."
She grabbed a dented metal bucket from the dirt beside her.
"I have some potatoes and onions I can spare. There's still time for them. I can give you a bunch of carrot starts, and I can spare a few live chickens."
"Oh, really, you shouldn't.
Believe me, Cora, you have no idea how long the winter will be and how soon it will be here. It's one thing up here for men. A lot of them are going to leave for work on that new pipeline. You and me, mothers, we stay on the homestead and keep our children alive and well. It's not always easy. The way we do it is together. We help whenever we can. We trade. Tomorrow I'll show you how to can salmon. You need to start filling your root cellar with food for winter now."
"You're scaring me," Mama said.
Thelma touched Mama's arm.
"I remember when we first came up here from Kansas City. My mom did nothing but cry. She died the second winter here. I still think she willed herself to die, just couldn't stand the dark or the cold.
A woman has to be tough as steel up here, Cora. You can't count on anyone to save you and your children. You have to be willing to save yourselves, and you have to learn fast. In Alaska, you can make one mistake. One. The second one will kill you.
I don't think we're well prepared, Mama said. Maybe we've already made a mistake by coming here.
I'll help you, Thelma promised. We all will. 5. The endless daylight rewound Lenny's internal clock, made her feel strangely out of step with the universe, as if even time, the one thing you could count on, was different in Alaska. It was daylight when she went to bed, and daylight when she woke up. Now it was Monday morning. She stood at the window, staring at the newly clean glass, trying to make out her reflection. A useless effort. There was just too much light. She could only see a ghost of herself, but she knew she didn't look good, even for Alaska. First and always was her hair, long and untamed and red, and there was the milky skin that was standard issue with the hair, and freckles like red pepper flakes across her nose. The best of her features, her blue-green eyes, were not enhanced by cinnamon-colored lashes. Mama came up behind her, placed her hands on Lenny's shoulders. You are beautiful, and you will make friends at this new school. Lenny wanted to take comfort from the familiar words, but how often had they proven untrue? She'd been the new girl at school a lot of times, and she'd never yet found a place she fit in. Something was always wrong about her on the first day. Her hair, her clothes, her shoes. First impressions mattered in junior high. She had learned that lesson the hard way. It was hard to recover from a fashion error with 13-year-old girls.
I'm probably the only girl in the whole school, she said with a dramatic sigh.
She didn't want to hope for the best. Dashed hopes were worse than no hopes at all.
Certainly you'll be the prettiest,
Mama said, tucking the hair behind Lenny's ear with a gentleness that reminded Lenny that whatever happened, she wasn't ever really alone. She had her mama. The cabin door opened, bringing in a whoosh of cold air. Dad came in, carrying a pair of dead mallards, their broken necks hanging, beaks banging into his thigh. He set his gun in the rack by the door and laid his kill on the wooden counter by the dry sink.
Ted took me to his blind before dawn. We have duck for dinner.
He slipped in beside Mama and kissed the side of her neck. Mama swatted him away, laughing.
You want coffee?
When Mama went into the kitchen, Dad turned to Lenny.
You look glum for a girl going off to school?
I'm fine.
Maybe I know the problem, Dad said.
I doubt it, she said, sounding as dispirited as she felt.
Let me see,
Dad said, frowning in an exaggerated way. He left her standing there and went into his bedroom. Moments later, he came out carrying a black trash bag, which he set on the table.
Maybe this will help.
Yeah, what she needed was garbage.
Open it,
Dad said. Lenny reluctantly ripped the bag open. Inside, she found a pair of rust and black striped bell bottoms and a fuzzy, ivory-colored wool fisherman's sweater that looked like it used to be a man's size and someone had shrunk it. Oh my God. Lenny might not know much about fashion, but these were definitely boys' pants, and the sweater, she didn't think it had been in style in any year of her life. Lenny caught Mama's look. They both knew how hard he had tried and how profoundly he'd failed. In Seattle, an outfit like this was social suicide.
Lenny?
Dad said, his face falling in disappointment. She forced a smile.
It's perfect, Dad. Thanks.
He sighed and smiled.
Oh, good. I spent a long time picking through the bins.
Salvation Army. So he had planned ahead. Thought of her the other day when they were in Homer. It made the ugly clothes almost beautiful.
Put them on,
Dad said. Lenny managed a smile. She went into her parents' bedroom and changed her clothes. The Irish sweater was too small. The wool was so thick she could hardly bend her arms.
You look gorgeous, Mama said.
She tried to smile. Mama came forward with a metal Winnie the Pooh lunchbox. Thelma thought you'd like this. And with that, Lenny's social fate was sealed, but there was nothing she could do about it.
Well, she said to her dad, we better move it. I don't want to be late.
Mama hugged her fiercely, whispered, good luck. Outside, Lenny climbed into the passenger seat of the VW bus, and they were off, bouncing down the bumpy trail, turning toward town, onto the main road, rumbling past the field that called itself an airstrip. At the bridge, Lenny yelled, stop! Dad hit the brakes and turned to her.
What?
Can I walk from here?
He gave her a disappointed look.
Really?
She was too nervous to smooth his ruffled feelings. One thing that was true of every school she'd been at was this. Once you hit junior high, parents were to be absent. The chances of them embarrassing you were sky high.
I'm 13, and this is Alaska, where we're supposed to be tough, Lenny said. Come on, Dad. Please.
Okay, I'll do it for you.
She got out of the bus and walked alone through town, past a man sitting Indian style on the side of the road with a goose in his lap. She heard him say, no way, Matilda, to the bird as she hurried past the dirty tent that housed the fishing charter service. The one-room schoolhouse sat on a weedy lot behind town. Green and yellow marshes spread out behind it, a river meandering in a sloping S-shape through the tall grass. The school was in an A-frame building made of skinned logs with a steeply pitched metal roof. At the open door, Lenny paused and peered inside. The room was bigger than it looked from the outside, at least 14 by 14. There was a chalkboard on the back wall with the words Seward's Folly written in capital letters. At the front of the room, a native woman stood behind a big desk facing the door. She was solid-looking, with broad shoulders and big, capable hands. Long black hair, twined into two sloppy braids, framed a face the color of light coffee. Tattooed black lines ran in vertical stripes from her lower lip to her chin. She wore faded Levi's tucked into rubber boots, a man's flannel shirt, and a fringed suede vest. She saw Lenny and yelled, "Hello! Welcome!" The kids in the classroom turned in a screeching of chairs. There were six students. Two younger kids sat in the front row, girls. She recognized them from Mad Earl's compound, Martha and Agnes. She also recognized that sour-looking teenage boy, Axel. There were two giggling native girls who looked to be about 8 or 9, sitting at desks pushed together. Each was wearing a wilted dandelion crown. On the right side of the room, a pair of desks were pushed together, side by side, facing the blackboard. One was empty. At the other sat a scrawny boy about her age with shoulder-length blonde hair. He was the only student who seemed interested in her. He had stayed turned around in his seat and was still staring at her.
I'm Tika Rhodes, the teacher said. My husband and I live in Bear Cove, so sometimes I can't get here in winter, but I do my best. That's what I expect of my students, too.
She smiled.
And you're Lenora Albright. Thelma told me to expect you.
Lenny.
You're what, 11?
Ms. Rhodes said, studying Lenny.
13,
Lenny said, feeling her cheeks heat up. If only she would start developing boobs. Ms. Rhodes nodded.
Perfect. Matthew is 13, too. Go take a seat over there.
She pointed to the boy with the blonde hair.
Go on.
Lenny's grip on her stupid Winnie the Pooh lunchbox was so tight her fingers hurt.
Hi,
she said to Axel as she passed his desk. He gave her a who cares glance and went back to drawing something that looked like an alien with massive boobs on his peachy folder. She slid bumpily into the seat beside the 13-year-old boy.
Hey,
she mumbled, glancing sideways. He grinned, showing off a mouthful of crooked teeth.
Thank Christ, he said, shoving the hair out of his face. I thought I was going to have to sit with Axel for the rest of the year. I think the kid is going to end up in prison.
Lenny laughed in spite of herself.
Where are you from?
He asked. Lenny never knew how to answer that question. It implied a permanence, a before that had never existed for her. She'd never thought of any place as home.
My last school was near Seattle.
You must feel like you've fallen into Mordor.
You read Lord of the Rings?
I know. Hopelessly uncool. It's Alaska, though. The winters are dark as shit, and we don't have TV. Unlike my dad, I can't spend hours listening to old people yammering on the ham radio.
Lenny felt the start of an emotion so new she couldn't categorize it.
I love Tolkien,
she said quietly. It felt oddly freeing to be honest with someone. Most of the kids at her last school had cared more about movies and music than books.
And Herbert.
Dune was amazing. Fear is the mind killer. It's so true, man.
And Stranger in a Strange Land. That's kind of how I feel here.
You should. Nothing is normal in the last frontier. There's a town up north that has a dog for a mayor.
No way.
True. A Malamute. They voted him in.
Matthew laid a hand to his chest.
You can't make this crap up.
I saw a man sitting with a goose in his lap on the way here. He was talking to the bird, I think.
That's Crazy Pete and Matilda. They're married.
Lenny laughed out loud.
You have a weird laugh.
Lenny felt her cheeks heat up in embarrassment. No one had ever told her that before. Was it true? What did she sound like? Oh, God.
I'm sorry. I don't know why I said that. My social skills blow. You're the first girl my age I've talked to in a while. I mean, you're pretty. That's all. I'm blabbering, aren't I? You're probably going to run away, screaming, and ask to sit next to Axel, the soon-to-be murderer, and it will be an improvement. Okay, I'm shutting up now.
Lenny hadn't heard anything after pretty. She tried to tell herself it meant nothing, but when Matthew looked at her, she felt a flutter of possibility. She thought, we could be friends, and not ride the bus or eat at the same table friends. Friends. The kind who had real things in common, like Sam and Frodo, Anne and Diana, Ponyboy and Johnny. She closed her eyes for a split second, imagining it. They could laugh and talk and...
Lenny? He said. Lenny?
Oh my God, he'd said her name twice.
Yeah, I get it. I space out all the time. My mom says it's what happens when you live in your own head with a bunch of made-up people. Then again, she's been reading another roadside attraction since Christmas.
I do that, Lenny confessed. Sometimes I just spaz out.
He shrugged, as if to imply that there was nothing wrong with her.
Hey, have you heard about the barbecue tonight?
So what about the party? Can you come? Lenny kept replaying it over and over again as she waited for her dad to pick her up from school. She'd wanted to say yes and mean it. She wanted it more than she'd wanted anything in a while. But her parents weren't community barbecue people. Community anything, really. It wasn't who the Albrights were. The families in their old neighborhood used to have all kinds of gatherings. Backyard barbecues where the dads wore v-necks and drank scotch and flipped burgers, and the women smoked cigarettes and sipped martinis and carried trays of bacon-wrapped chicken livers while kids screamed and ran around. She knew this because once she'd peered over the neighbor's fence and seen all of it, hula hoops and slip-and-slides and sprinklers.
So, Red, how was school?
Dad asked at the end of the day when Lenny climbed into the VW bus and slammed the door. He was the last parent to arrive.
We learned about the U.S. buying Alaska from Russia, and about Mount Alyeska in the Chugach mountain range.
He grunted acceptance of that and put the vehicle in gear. Lenny thought about how to say what she wanted to say. There's a boy my age in class. He's our neighbor. No, mentioning a boy was the wrong tack. Our neighbors are hosting a barbecue and invited us. But Dad hated that kind of thing, or he used to, in all the other places they'd lived. They rattled down the dirt road, dust billowing up on either side, and turned into their driveway. At home, they discovered a crowd of people in the yard. Most of the Harlan clan was there, working. They moved in wordless harmony, coming together and drifting apart like dancers. Clyde had that cage thing and was milling logs into boards. Ted was finishing the cache, pounding boards to the side stanchions. Donna was stacking firewood.
Our friends showed up at noon to help us prepare for winter,
Dad said.
No. They're better than friends, Red. They're comrades.
Comrades? Lenny frowned. Were they communists now?
She was pretty sure her dad hated the commies as much as he hated the man and hippies.
This is what the world should be, Red. People helping each other instead of killing their mothers for a little bread.
Lenny couldn't help noticing that almost everyone had a gun holstered at his or her waist. Dad opened the bus door.
We're all going to Sterling this weekend to fish for salmon at Farmer's Hole on the Kenai River. Apparently, these king salmon are a bitch to land.
He stepped out into the soggy ground. Mad Earl waved a gloved hand at her dad, who immediately bounded off in the old man's direction. Lenny walked past a new structure that was about 9 feet high by 4 feet wide, with sides covered in thick black plastic. Unspooled garbage bags, Lenny was pretty sure. An open door revealed an interior full of sockeye salmon, sliced in half along the spines and hung tented on branches. Thelma was kneeling in the dirt, tending to a fire built in a contained metal box. Smoke puffed up in dark clouds, reached up to the salmon hanging on branches above the fire. Mama looked up from the salmon she was gutting at a table in the yard. There was a smear of pink guts across her chin.
It's a smokehouse, Mama said, cocking her head toward Thelma. Thelma is teaching me how to smoke fish. It's quite an art, apparently. Too much heat, you cook the fish. It's supposed to smoke and dry at the same time. Yum. How was your first day of school?
A red kerchief kept the hair out of her eyes.
Cool. No social suicide issues with the clothes or the lunchbox? No girls making fun of you?
Lenny couldn't help smiling.
No girls my age at all. But there's a boy.
That got Mama's interest.
A boy?
Lenny felt herself blushing.
A friend, Mama. He just happens to be a boy.
Mama was trying not to smile as she lit her cigarette.
Is he cute?
Lenny ignored that.
He says there's a community barbecue tonight, and I want to go.
Yeah, we're going.
Really? That's great.
Yeah, Mama said, smiling.
I told you it would be different here.
When it came time to dress for the barbecue, Lenny kind of lost her mind. Honestly, she didn't know what was wrong with her. She didn't have a lot of choices to choose from, but that didn't stop her from trying on several different combinations. In the end, mostly because she was exhausted by the desire to look pretty when pretty was impossible, she decided on a pair of plaid polyester bell-bottoms and a ribbed green turtleneck beneath a fringed, fake suede vest. Try as she might, she couldn't do anything with her hair. She finger-combed it back from her face and twined it into a fuzzy, fist-sized braid. She found Mama in the kitchen, placing thick squares of cornbread into a Tupperware container. She had brushed her shoulder-length, shag-cut hair until it glimmered in the light. She had definitely dressed to impress in tight bell-bottom jeans and a fitted white sweater with a huge Indian turquoise squash blossom necklace that she'd bought a few years ago. Mama seemed distracted as she burped the lid of air from the container.
You're worried, aren't you?
Why would you say that? Mama gave her a quick, bright smile, but the look in her eyes couldn't be so easily transformed. She was wearing makeup for the first time in days, and it made her look vibrant and beautiful.
Remember the fair? That was different. The guy tried to cheat him.
That wasn't how Lenny remembered it. They'd been having a good time at the state fair until her dad started drinking beer. Then some guy had flirted with Mama, and she had flirted back, and Dad had gone ballistic. He shoved the man hard enough to crack his head into the tent pole at the beer house and started yelling. When the security guys came, Dad was so belligerent that the cops were called. Lenny had been mortified to see two of her classmates watching the altercation. They'd seen her dad get dragged over to the cop car. Dad opened the cabin door and came inside.
Are my beautiful girls ready to party?
You bet,
Mama said quickly, smiling.
Let's go then,
Dad said, herding them into the bus. In no time, it was less than a quarter of a mile as the crow flew, they drove up to the steel gate with the bleached